Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Hall of Jostis Comic Cast. You got Above Average Joe here, and yet again, we're graced with the presence of our good friend from Cerebral Syndicate. So, Excalibur, say hi.
Hello.
Well, that was anticlimactic. I tee it up, and you're like, hi.
Hello.
You just Ross Gellard me there.
No, dude, I was trying to do my best Spider-Verse. Hey. Shit. Except I didn't have a shoulder and my back is in front of me, hey. So it would have been kind of awkward.
Let go of my hair.
Hey. No. Hey.
Well, based on that, you'd think this was a happy episode. Unfortunately, I'm going to bring things down a bit. We're going to do another World Builder special here in memory of the great Stan Lee.
Yeah.
As everybody knows, we lost our beloved Generalissimo in November.
Yep.
The age of 96. A life well lived.
Yeah.
So we want to take a moment here to remember Stan for everything he gave us.
Yeah. And when we say, and honestly, he's one of those ones, you know, kind of next to like Jack Kirby and some of the other creators of his time.
Yeah.
Like, these dudes are, when you talk world builders,
yeah,
they are the clean cut, clear definition of what that means.
Exactly.
A lot of our favorite writers and creators today have been inspired by Stan and so many others.
Oh, absolutely.
And he came into comics at a time where comics weren't comics, and he really fostered what we know now as, you know, the modern, like, comic superhero story.
He changed culture so much that it changed the way DC operated, and they had been around longer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, he does one comic, and they go,
oh, shit.
Yeah. And they just totally were like, oh,
they meerkatted hard.
Yeah.
What I find impressive about Stan Lee, and just to give some vital stats here again, he was born as Stanley Martin Lieber in 1922, served in the military in World War II, like so many of our great creators did. Yeah. He had an interesting history in comics. I mean, starting as kind of a line editor with Atlas, which eventually became Timely, which then became Marvel. Yeah. So he was really just the steward of it for quite a long time. I think just looking back through his bibliography, created some 420 plus characters for Marvel proper.
Yeah.
And that's counting like all the supporting cast. So it's not just Peter Parker. It's Peter. It's Aunt May. It's Uncle Ben. It's Liz Allen. It's Flash Thompson. It's all these characters. Yeah. Built entire worlds. And really, I mean, it defined comic book culture for so long.
It did. And I think it will continue. Especially because I don't think it will take a while before we see another creator of this magnitude.
Yeah.
I mean, because this guy created a literal universe.
Yeah.
Like, and this is just not, you know, me, you know, blowing the guy up. Like, it's true.
No,
like,
it's true. He created an entire
universe that we will be celebrating for, you know, the next.
If you look at the...
Whatever. Yeah, like, there's no time to this.
If you look at the Marvel Universe and every character that's in the zeitgeist, really, the only character that he did not create was Captain America.
Yeah. That was it. That's it. Everybody else he's done.
Yeah.
You know, of course, his mainstay always being Spider-Man. Like, he's always been synonymous with Spider-Man.
And Fantastic Four.
And Fantastic Four. But then, you know, Thor, Hulk, Iron Man, Black Panther, Daredevil, Doctor Strange, Ant-Man, Scarlet Witch. Like, he had, his hands were in so much.
Yeah. I mean, he was not only editor, but, you know, wrote the first 100 issues of Fantastic Four, the first 100 and some odd issues of Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep.
The next person to write Amazing Spider-Man was Jerry Conway. And I think he took up at, like, you know, 110 or something like that.
Yeah, it was like 110, 111.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. I mean, he wrote Iron Man for a number of years to the point where it actually changed from being Tales of Suspense to Iron Man.
Yeah.
Same thing with Thor, Black Panther, so many things. Mm-hmm. I mean, he saw the genre change before him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so much so that when the Comics Code Authority came out, he was one of the first people to buck it.
Oh yeah, he was a major force in getting the Comic Code Authority kind of like disavowed. Were putting really hard and fast rules on comic book writers and culture as a whole at that point.
And he encouraged his writers and his editors to find the loopholes to push the envelope.
Yep.
That's how we got Hydra when they said we couldn't use Nazis. I
can't use
anymore.
Nazis?
What do we do? Well, we'll make the SS green.
Yeah. How about that? I like it.
Yeah.
Print it.
I mean, he got really creative when they started saying you could... When, like, Tomb of Dracula, where he created Blade.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, you can't do that anymore. It's vampirism. So he takes Blade and puts him in all these other books as backup stories. I mean, he got really, really creative. So much so that he actually forced the Comics Code Authority to adjust their guidelines.
Yeah.
Stan Lee, at a time when the entire country was wanting to blacklist and ban everything, got McCarthyism to go, okay, fine.
Yeah. God, just shut up. Like, that's literally that's what literally happened. What happened. Like, God, just shut up. And then eventually, because of how strongly he felt about having your freedom as a creator, the Comic Code doesn't even exist anymore.
No, it exists in name record.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, he got it moved from where it was a government oversight committee to where it was a pattern of self-governance by the publishers.
Yep.
And then from there, just slowly dissolved it. He's like the anti-Palpatine.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Anti-Palpatine. I like that.
This is how fascism dies.
Yeah.
With a whimper.
Yeah. Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Well, I think there was a couple of bangs involved the last time around, but...
Yeah.
Sorry, I got too real for a second. Okay. So, as you can tell, this episode is a little less structured than our usual World Builders, where we give more of a biographical history. We really just wanted to focus on appreciating Stan and what all he gave to the world.
Yeah.
So let's take a second and step away from the comic book culture side of things, and let's go to the cameo world. You know, the part where he's kind of more popularly known outside of the comic book shop.
Which is weird, right? Because
it's so weird.
Because you're like, my favorite part to look forward to in, like, Marvel movies, even if they aren't MCU movies, is, like, what's Stan going to do?
Yeah.
What's Stan going to do?
Like, I legitimately fist-pumped when he showed up as the announcer at the strip club in Deadpool.
Oh, dude, that was so good.
I laughed my ass off.
Well, even, like, you know, him in Spider-Verse, which is one of his last cameos, he was, you know, the shop owner.
Yeah.
You know, in the...
Which is actually a callback to the cameo he made in the Amazing Spider-Man 2 game.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of games, he was also in Spider-Man PS4 as well. He was the host in the restaurant. Yeah. So, you know, that was fun. I mean, and I think what's really been hitting me hard lately is realizing that, you know, being 2 months removed from him, you know, passing away, is now we're starting to see the tributes. And
the tributes have been beautiful and painful, but I thought I was past it until this week when I saw DC Comics tribute.
Oh, dude, that broke me.
That broke me. I was blubbering.
Yeah. I was a bitch. Like, I was at my desk like, I'm not going to cry at work.
Yeah. The day it happened, I actually didn't see the article. Uh-huh. I knew something happened because so many people texted me all at once, Joe, are you okay?
Yeah.
And I went, and then I go back into my office, I see what's happening, and then I just sat there and kind of, I wept with the door closed because, you know, I have an office and I can do that.
See, I don't have an office, so it wasn't an option for me.
Well, next time, come down the street, I'll let you borrow my office. We can cry in solace together.
And, you know, the tribute that they did for him at the end of Spider-Verse, I thought was...
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely magnificent.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was really, really beautiful. They did one for him for Spider-Man PS4 for the last DLC as well,
That's
too.
That's the one that caught me off guard.
That was a really good one.
That was painful. the banners they've done on all the Marvel Comics releases this month have been really good. I found them especially painful on the titles that featured characters that Stan himself
created. That he
created,
yeah.
Yeah, seeing it on Fantastic Four number 6, that hurt.
Yeah.
That hurt.
Yeah. You know, even you know, realizing how, and it's weird, right? Because Stan, he was, we always made him bigger than I think he made himself.
Which is interesting. He was so internally humble for such a larger than life person.
Yeah.
The several times I've met him or been in his panels, he is such this larger than life persona, but I don't think he ever saw himself that way.
No, and what I think was the best part or the most beautiful part about him is that he was, because he was exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he knew, or I hope he knew, how much he meant to every creator or every comic book fan or fan of his characters in the space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hope he knew that.
I don't think he ever took it for granted.
But but at the same time, he didn't inherently say, oh, you owe me, or, you know, didn't have, you know, a chip on the shoulder about it. Like, yeah. None of that shit. Like, he was very masterfully humble in the way that he accepted people.
Yes.
And I think that's because he knew, and a lot of the reason that he created a lot of his characters is that he knew that he had to fill a need that was not being filled at a time where our country was going through so much turmoil.
Yeah, whether it was a lot of upheaval.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason why, you know, he created Black Panther. He was like, you know what? People of color don't have representation in our stories, and they're reading our stories.
We're seeing a period in time when he created Spider-Man where the youth was becoming more active, and yeah. They were being ignored.
Yeah.
And wanted to give them that voice.
Yeah, and he wanted, you know, a Fantastic Four. He wanted to give, you know, he wanted to give a very micro view of, you know, an untraditional family structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Daredevil, he wanted to give a very altered view of what it's like to, you know, live with a disability.
Doctor Strange was a story of redemption and,
yeah.
and the shift from arrogance.
Yeah.
Iron Man is a story of, you know, circumstance changing point of view.
Yeah, and, you know, X-Men was very, you know, accepting people that are different from you.
X-Men's always been Marvel's civil rights book. Well, it's civil rights book when it's been handled properly.
Yeah, well, yeah, when handled, when it needs to be correctly. But yeah, he's done so much more than being a creator. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the staple of why, you know, creators are so great, that have the kind of legacy that he does, you know, and it's because they see that need and they realize that need, you know, like, again, him, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, you know, when Chris Claremont was really going with, you know, X-Men, you know, even though he's not dead.
Retired.
Yeah, he's just retired. but, you know,
he's doing well on the con circuit, though.
Yeah, doing really well. You know, even, you know, Marv Wolfman and, you know, Perez, like, they saw a need,
mm-hmm.
when they were creating characters. And
I think that's the difference, is they saw a need and acted on it versus trying to capitalize on a need.
Mm-hmm.
And what I don't mean that, you know, Stan's giving away stuff. Of course he's making money.
Yeah, of course.
But what I'm saying is that's not their primary drive.
No.
I want to sell this story versus this is a story that needs to be told.
Right.
And someone's going to buy it.
Right. You know, and you see it. And there's certain creators that you'll see that take the mantle of these characters. You know, like, so, you know, for instance, you know, we talk about how much we love, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates and what he's been doing for, you know, first Black Panther. And now Captain America. A lot of his writing reminds me of how Stan was handling things,
yes.
In the birth of that character. So, you know, essentially Ta-Nehisi Coates had to kind of give a resurgence, or, you know, be a, I don't want to say savior because it's kind of the wrong thing to say about, you know, Black Panther, but he had to revitalize a character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had to make it almost kind of like what Stan made it.
Absolutely. I felt that way about Mark Waid's current run on Doctor Strange. And mm-hmm. what I fell in love with it is in the first arc, he approaches, for anybody who's actually read comics that were written by Stan Lee, mm-hmm. you'll know that Stan has a very definitive, almost Shakespearean style.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very literary. And Mark Waid incorporated that into the Doctor Strange
yeah.
storyline. It's actually being told from the perspective of a diary, so it naturally involves this literary aspect, and it became a very organic experience. I love when we start seeing those kinds of stylistic homages to Stan.
Yeah.
One, it just does great things for the medium. I like that we're starting to see a shift back towards the literary respect for comics that was fostered by Stan.
You know, and Stan also had a great way of bringing his words to life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so great hearing stories of, you know, how he worked with some of the artists that he worked with. And, you know, a lot of the commonality in it is that they're like, the way that he wrote allowed us to collaborate better, which, you know, created what we now know as the Marvel style.
Way, yeah.
And it allowed his creators to have so much freedom to be able to give us, you know, iconic covers, like, you know, the original X-Men cover, or, mm-hmm. you know, the numerous, you know, fantastic panels that were done for the FF.
Oh, yeah.
So that is, again, something else that, you know, I don't think he will get enough credit for. And I think that's also because a lot of people may not be left to tell that story.
True.
Stories? But,
I was at a panel one time with my favorite artist, John Romita Jr., and mm-hmm. he's telling this story of Stan and his father.
Yeah. Because John Romita Sr. worked with Stan a lot.
Doing Spider-Man, and mm-hmm. he was an 8-year-old kid, walks into the room as Stan, kind of like that scene from Spider-Man 2 with J. Jonah in the costume, is like, up on chairs. No, it should be like this, and he should be doing this. I get this image of Stan Lee hopping on a table, like, no, Spider-Man should be like this, and posing like here.
Yeah, the 60-year-old dude jumping around furniture.
I love it. Love it. And that was Stan, and that was the same energy that he had throughout his life.
Yeah.
Now, I want to let's go back through the cameos here, because, I mean, you have a particular favorite one.
Oh, man.
Besides the ones that broke our hearts recently.
Yeah, besides this.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it Guardians 2, where he was the with the Watchers?
With the Watchers? Yeah. That was great.
I love that
one. I loved that one. Because that one paid homage to the fan theory that
he was a Watcher. Yeah.
Like, I loved that one.
That was probably why it was my favorite one. Yeah. Because after, I want to say it was after his first slate of MCU cameos, so like the original big three, and then we're kind of going into phase two, people were like, we think he's a Watcher. And then when you go back and watch those cameos, you're like, holy fuck, I think he is. Because he's a different character every time.
True. My personal favorite one will always be, as uneven as these films were, I love his cameo as Willy Lumpkin, the mailman, in the first Fantastic Four movie. I love that. One, because he's actually playing a character that he created.
Yes.
Two, it's just like the greatest thing to see Stan in something, such a minor role.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, some random guy who opens a gamma soda and passes out, but I like seeing him as, you know, the FedEx driver, the mailman.
Yeah, some dude that's, like, important at that point in time.
Yeah.
You know, even when, you know, in the first Guardians where Rocket and Groot were, you know, chasing down whoever they were chasing down.
The pervert.
When and he's, you know, playing the fucking space pimp.
Yeah.
Stuff like that is very, like, and I loved how he would lean into it, and it wasn't just, like, oh, I'm not going to do that. Like, he wanted to be a part of it. So a lot of his cameos would be some of the most ridiculous shit.
And I also like them when they used them narratively.
Yeah.
Like in, as much as I have an issue with the rest of this film, Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
When Peter's at his lowest and this man walks up, gives this inspiring speech, and just walks away.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, that's... It's a tongue-in-cheek meta-narrative. Like, here's Stan picking Spider-Man back up.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
And you talk about, like, favorite Spider cameos. You know, the cameo he did in, you know, the original, or the 90s Spider-Man, you know, animated series.
At the end of it, yeah.
Yeah, where he, you know, meets Spider-Man, and well, holy shit, I just met my own creation.
Like, that was my favorite cameo, because, like, that was the cameo that I had in my head. When everyone else is talking about Stan Lee, I'm like, man, he showed up in the cartoon series that I love. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, and around that time, too, and even for some of the video games, he provided a lot of voiceover work.
Oh, yeah.
So there were many times in, you know, that 90s series where he was the disembodied head.
Yeah.
narrating the beginning of an episode. He did
a lot
for,
with the Fantastic Four.
That's what I'm saying. He did
Surfer
a lot
series.
For Silver Surfer and the FF series as well. Yeah. He did it a couple times for Iron Man, but probably not as much as he did for Spider-Man and for the FF and Silver Surfer. Probably because he was probably a little more directly involved with those than he was in Iron Man, I think.
Plus those were the series that had longer runs.
Iron Man
had two seasons, but there was like they took like 2 years off between the first and second seasons.
It was weird. It was really weird.
That was when it was part of Marvel Action Hour.
Yeah.
I just dated myself. Anybody knows what that?
Talk about making you feel old earlier.
Sunday mornings.
Jesus, dude.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna take a break here for a second, drink some Ensure, drink some Geritol. My lower back's killing me right now. But it's as far as like Stan cameos go, there are so many great ones that people don't know about. Like, very few people watch this, even though I think it's kind of a missed opportunity, but the 2003 animated MTV Spider-Man series.
Oh, yeah, it was good.
It was great.
With Neil Patrick Harris as Parker? Yeah.
Perfect. His cameo, again, kind of in that same Spider-Man 3 role.
God, that
show
was so garbage, though.
You know, I loved it.
It was so bad.
I loved it. Now, there were episodes that weren't great.
Oh, dude, no.
Like, the whole, like, Talon slash, you know, fake black cat thing.
Yeah,
like, that was weird. But the episode with the Terranox, and you've got James Marsters doing his Spike voice with a Russian accent. And I'm like, I'm confused, but this is funny. It's like Spider-Man and Die Hard at the same time. What's going on here?
I don't know. Like, I don't know how I feel about it.
I'm laughing, but I don't know if I enjoy it.
Right. Like, I'm not inherently liking any of this.
Yeah. Why is MJ's head kind of spoon-shaped?
Yeah. Why does she look like one of those Conehead characters? Again, dating ourselves.
Yeah, there we go. I feel better about life now.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting is that, like, how long Stan was involved in Marvel Comics. I mean, he left the.
He didn't retire until like the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Like, he was around for a long time. And you're talking about a guy like, and he was a lifer. Like, he had done some weird one-off stuff for, like, you know, some other publishers, but that was like
he was guested on. He did a few like guest what ifs for DC, which was kind of like I particularly enjoyed his what if for Robin, where he kind of invented him as a Ronin.
Yeah,
I was like, that's cool.
Yeah. So
and then years later, we get Damian.
Yeah. Coincidence? I think not. Did he create Damian? Probably.
I would definitely enjoy Damian more if he was a Stan Lee creation and not a Grant Morrison creation.
Yeah.
All right. There we go.
It's
the mental gymnastics that us fans go through.
Yeah. Totally. And if I say anything about Stan, even though I love that he was so loyal to Marvel till the end of his days, I would have loved to see him, especially like in this day and age, like if he was much, much younger, if he was in this era of creating comics, I mean, man, he would have been.
Well, he was still creating stuff at PAL.
Yeah, he was still creating stuff at PAL. I think he would have really leaned into, and I think if the creator-owned movement would have started a lot sooner, like it is now, I think he would have really, really leaned into that. Like, I think we would have gotten some really fantastic stuff out of Stan if he wasn't trying to create stuff in his later years.
Yeah.
Because it would have, you know, I think it would have been, you know, more focused, and he would have had, you know, a lot more energy around it. And, you know, even
absolutely.
If he would have did, you know, a couple of runs for, you know, DC, which he probably wouldn't have done. But
I
even
don't know. He has such a sense of humor about the rivalry between DC and Marvel. One of my favorite pictures, it was from an old, like, a wizard convention where, like, there's, like, Wolverine and Batman, and he's standing between them, like, ah, don't fight!
Yeah.
And they recreated that one time at a Wizard World show between, like, Lou Ferrigno and Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, that was awesome.
What I really enjoyed about Stan is that he wanted people to be excited about comics.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, he would have preferred Marvel, obviously,
yeah.
But he wanted people invested in the medium, and
right.
That's what I find the best.
Because he knew how important it was as, you know, again, not taking the fandom for granted. Like, he knew how important comics were on a societal front. Mm-hmm. Like, he again, going back to why he created some of the characters that he created, he knew it was important for everybody that was in any way, shape, or form a part of the medium. He was like, hey, it's important that you, like...
These are relevant things.
These are relevant. Like, this is an art form that we need to keep alive, and, you know, it's for us, and, you know, creators have spent their time making it because, you know, not just for themselves, they're making it because they're like, these are stories that we'd like to tell that we want to share.
And what I find interesting is that he's known for this, you know, exuberance and optimism, but he almost left the industry.
He did. Very early, too.
Very early.
Very early.
He grew frustrated because he wasn't getting anywhere.
And yeah, dude, because he was writing fucking rom-coms.
Because at that point, you know, it's all he can get through.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, no, no, if it's not this, we can't go. And what I love is his wife, Joan, who was so much of his partner in every sense, told him to write one comic he could be proud of. Write one story he could be proud of. And that was the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and it's so funny because I love hearing this story, and I've heard this story so many times, where she goes, just write the story you want to write. You're already thinking about quitting. If the story flops, they'll just fucking fire you.
and that was Joan. Like, I love that she was like, well, you're going to do it
either way. Yeah, you're going to quit anyway, so you might as well put your best foot forward.
Yeah. And
they loved it.
Yeah.
And it came at such an opportune time because that was when DC had just relaunched themselves as DC. And
yeah, they were now the DC Comics group. And
yeah, and they had created Justice League, and Justice League was taking off to massive success very early. And, you know, Timely was like, what?
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we need to rebrand. And we need something that's going to help this rebrand, and that was Fantastic Four.
Yeah, so, and that's when it became the Marvel Comics group, where the leftovers of Atlas and the leftovers of Timely were reunited into this, you know, conglomerate publishing before it actually became Marvel proper, and that didn't happen until like the 70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It took another like 30 some odd years before that happened.
Yeah.
And you know, I love hearing the story. I don't know if you've heard this one, but him and Bob Kane were really close.
Yes.
And this was kind of like in the 80s. And I think it was Stan told the story at a panel. And he was saying, you know, we always had a bet whose marquee hero would show up on film first. And 89, when the original Batman comes out, they're riding in a limo together to the premiere. And he just goes, you son of a bitch. And it's so great.
That's signature Stan too.
Yeah, because you know they were, you know, and the bet was basically between Batman and Spider-Man.
Yeah,
And he was, you know, and that just speaks volumes to like how his character was and how much he just wanted to see everybody win.
Exactly.
And that's and I think he knew that was the most important part of the culture. Was he was so upbeat and so positive and so much of a steward for or herald of the culture that it had. To, hey man, I'm getting in my puns tonight.
Man, it's see, happening. Mike's not here. You're filling that role. I'm gonna groan no matter what.
I have to. It's fine. It's fine. Dylan does it too.
Yeah, with the groaning?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We do cross episodes. He and I are just like, yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah. But yeah.
I'm like, actually a happy person. I'm not this angry all the time.
But he was, but that's what I loved about Stan. You know, hearing stories about him through him or through other people.
Oh, yeah.
He was just a bright spot all the time in the industry, no matter what.
Absolutely. One of my favorite moments from him at a panel, and this is a cliche question, everyone always asked it, and you know, what's your favorite character? And out of all the things he could possibly say, I love the fact that his favorite character was always Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Like, and it's simply because, well, he's a king, he can do whatever he wants, he's got diplomatic immunity. I'm like, I love this. So many people would say it's this. No, it's Dr. Doom.
Nah, he was straight up.
Yeah. It just, there was no waffling whatsoever. And I, the last time I saw him, one, I was glad when he finally stopped touring.
Same.
Just let the man rest. But I got to see him one last time at a panel at Dallas Comic Con. It was one that was moderated by Todd McFarlane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, him and Todd were really close,
too. Oh, really close, too. That was very much like a grandfather-like relationship there.
Yeah, 100%.
It was so fun watching Stan just be excited that so many people were there to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knew how to light up a room. He was just very energetic. And we are poorer without him. I'm choking back tears now, so Lee, you say things now.
No, you're absolutely right. He was a guy that I think, no matter what, we were always getting his best.
Yeah.
And to your point, like when he said he was gonna stop touring, like I was like, oh, thank God, and like. At that point too, he was also getting really sick. Like he was getting sick a lot.
Go ahead.
And this was a year after Joni died as well too. So he was already having a rough go of it.
Yeah. And I think that's when collectively that most of the fandom was like, just stop.
Just stop, dude. Like you don't. And the sad thing about it, and I have to bring this down a little bit because you know a lot of people may have been privy to or weren't. On top of him being sick. There was also a lot of internal disputes going on within his estate,
mm-hmm.
From reports, you know, his daughter taking advantage of him, you know, people that were tied with her taking advantage of him, you know,
apt to believe that than anything.
Yeah. Same. You know, whoever, you know, his agent was at the time, like, you know, getting in, you know, in like shady dealings and you know trying to you know quote unquote preserve his legacy and you know
sell it off from under him
and more so selling it up under him you know even to the point to where you know his caretakers were you know trying to look out for him like people that were actually you know taking care of him at his home and you know calling the police on these people because they were like yo like I think there's like senior abuse going on and then you know the weird tapes that were coming out just ever so
there was a lot of just inherently oogie things that were going on
and I hate that you know the last year of Stan's life was so marred by the shady dealings and you know having to deal with you know his wife being you know gone for you know for a year and you know, not having a great relationship with the people around him.
He should have been surrounded by people that loved him as opposed to the people who were just trying to make a buck off of him.
Yeah.
I agree. And that was the one bright spot I found in his passing is that he was finally away from those influences.
Yeah.
But what I loved about that, the only bright spot in that real scenario is that the fandom was in his corner.
Oh, 100%.
There was no, oh, I'm never going to get to meet Stan Lee. It was a lot of, dude, rest.
Yeah.
Rest. I remember the first time I met him.
And we were telling him that 10 years ago.
God. the first time I met him was 3 weeks after he had his pacemaker put in.
Yeah.
At the show in Dallas. And I'm like, you don't need to be here.
Yeah.
This place is a germ factory. Yeah. And you've got an open chest wound, dude. Yeah, no. Dude.
Yeah.
I was terrified. Okay, funny story.
Yeah.
So at that point, my wife was in a wheelchair. She had broken her ankle or something. She was in a wheelchair. So they bring us to the front of the line. Stan walks out, trips, and like time slows down.
Yeah,
I'm watching 90-something-year-old Stan Lee, who's 3 weeks out of a pacemaker, hurl towards a very, very hard metal landing, and I'm just like, "Oh, I cannot be ground zero for this."
Yeah.
Funny thing happened. So his handler reaches out. This guy had massive reflexes. Grabs Stan, spins him back around, fixes his glasses, and stands. Poor Stan's standing there like, what the hell just happened? Funny as hell, because he stands there and like looks around like, it's kind of like that scene from Rush Hour 2. Which one of y'all kicked me?
Yeah, which one of y'all kicked me?
He's just like, what the hell? And then he realized, oh, hi. And he comes up. He shakes my hand. He shakes Bailey's hand. My niece is there with us. Shakes her hand. Get the autograph. He talks to us for a second. So engaging.
Yeah.
But also, there was, you know, right before that, was 15 seconds of sheer terror as I'm watching a 91-year-old man fall. And I'm like, ah! I'm sitting there doing math, like, how quickly can I make it over this table?
Right.
Like,
can I help him?
I will lay down my life at this point.
My spider senses are tingling, and I don't know what I can do about it.
Yeah, I'm like, honey. I'm like, okay, if I, how fast can I get climb over her to save Stan? She'll understand.
Can I use you as a meat shield?
I was doing, like, fast math, man. Yeah. It was bad.
Yeah.
But
sitting there like Dr. Strange, how many possibilities are there?
Yeah. But the very first autograph I got from him was had this old Marvel Masterworks Volume 1 of Amazing Spider-Man. It's like the first Spider-Man comics I ever owned. This thing's beat to hell and back.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my first conventions I really go to, and Bailey, my wife, walks up to one of the security guards and like, hey, so where's the line for Stan Lee? It's like 2 hours before he's supposed to sign. And they go, you're it. Well, I'm across the convention hall, like getting a hot dog, you know, spending 45 minutes in line paying $9 for a cold hot dog.
Yeah.
I get this phone call, Joe, get over here. Why? I'm first in line. I book it.
Fuck this hot dog!
I don't think my feet hit the ground. That was like some instant transmission stuff. Yeah. I was here, and then I was there.
Yeah.
And people don't start lining up till there's 30 of us. They realize that's a line, not just people standing in the corner. I'm in line for 2 hours. I have to pee.
Yeah.
I am like, I'm not getting out of line. I'm the first in line to be standing. I'm not getting out of line. Renal failure. I'm not getting out of line.
Yeah, your fucking eyeballs are drowning.
Yeah. So I spend 2 hours thinking about what I'm going to say to say in Stan's general direction. Thank you so much. This means so much to me. I get up there. My palms are sweaty. And everything I had planned to say goes
knees
out
weak,
of my mind.
Arms are heavy.
Yeah. If I was wearing a sweater, there would have been vomit already. Okay? Oh, you ass. So I get up there, and the only
coherent... I've been ready for him tonight.
Yeah. The only coherent thought I have is, Joe, don't be the guy who pisses himself in front of Stan Lee.
Right.
He signs the book. I'm there. They've got a grading station right next to it. At that point, this is how I know I really had to go, because I'm holding my holy grail in my hands.
Yeah.
I get to the grading thing. I hurl it in Bailey's general direction and just go racing to the bathroom. And I'm in there going, you just threw that book, and I hope to God my wife grabbed it.
Yeah.
Funny thing is, I get out there, and now the man was a machine when it came to signing.
Yeah.
Like, I get carpal tunnel, filling out paperwork at the office, and he's just I walk right up to the table, and he's there. I'm like, very surreal experience.
Yeah.
Do you ever get a chance to cross paths with him?
I didn't, actually, because anytime he was around, I either found out way too late, or I was at a convention, but I was on the other side of the convention, and I wouldn't have made it in time.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck. So that's one of the things I wish I would have done. But at the same time, I more so am glad that he's given us the body of work that he has.
Yes.
So by proxy, I felt like I've met him already.
Oh, yeah,
it's weird, right? Once you absorb so much content from a particular creator, you're like, yeah, okay. Because being a creator is very personal.
Very. You're giving so much to an audience.
Yeah, exactly. So, being able to, read his works or, hear his stories or stuff like that. Especially because even when he speaks, he's a very expressive storyteller. Like, he's a very dynamic storyteller. So, even when he's, talking in panels, or was talking at panels, or in general,
I know it's very hard to
conversation.
Discuss him in the past tense.
Right. He made you feel like you were there.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, and so for me, it's like, man, I don't really I didn't get a chance to meet him, but at the same time, it's like, I feel like I have already.
You feel like you already knew him.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's one thing I can say about meeting Stan, is that Stan was Stan, whether he was right in front of you, 20 yards away on a screen, on a stage, you're seeing an interview with him. Stan was Stan.
Yeah.
Like, the same, there was no differentiated experience. The same Stan you see given, thanking people for coming to see his cameos at the premiere of Black Panther was the same Stan I had when I was trying not to piss myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I was meeting my hero or simply because my kidneys were failing, but that, like, I was only in front of him for like 15 seconds. felt like 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, I remember everything about that moment. My wedding day is fuzzy, but I can remember that moment. Honey, if you're listening to this, I love you, and I will go back and watch the video, I swear.
Jesus, dude.
I know. I'm shooting myself in the foot so many ways.
Dude.
Yeah, it's probably to my advantage that she's not here while we're recording this. Yeah. So, I mean, there's... What else can you say about Stan? I mean, he was just such a prolific creator, a genuine soul. He was one of the last greats.
He really was, man. And that's, I think that's the most upsetting to me,
mm-hmm.
Is that we have, you know, and time is finite. And, and I feel like, especially because we haven't hit the realm of where our current creators are, where they're at that point yet, right? Yeah. So he is the last, he was the last of that generation of creators.
I mean, 2018 was a rough year for Spider-Man fans because for every success we had, we lost Steve and we lost Stan.
Yeah, and Steve was a really hard one too, man.
Yeah, like, that one messed me up. And despite him being a very interesting character, as we discovered in our world builder, it was rough.
And I think because Steve defined so much of what Spider-Man looked like.
His definitive style.
And how he looked like and how he moved and how he was eventually animated and eventually screen acted. So he...
We finally got the Ditko eyes in Civil War.
Thank you. So the fact that kind of impact is so huge that you impact the look of one character for generations. Like, the Ditko,
the Ditko drawing influenced Romita's drawing.
Yep.
I mean, Romita just did a beefed up version of what Ditko did.
Yeah, even, you know, McFarlane. When McFarlane was doing Spider-Man, like, his version of Spider-Man would not be without what Ditko did.
Yeah, you can see the progression of the art styles. Yeah.
You know, and the same thing with Stan. Like, Stan, you know, fathered so many creators, both artists and writers, down to generations. And we're not just talking people that he's affected directly. You know, that worked with him in his same space at the time. We're talking people down to, you know, who are writing now. Like, a lot of people that are writing now probably wrote because they were fans of Stan's work.
Tom King recently said that he always loved the Stan Lee Presents that was always in the first page of Marvel Comics. That's why he always puts DC Comics Presents in his books. And, like, it's those little things that I love. His lasting influence on the medium. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, well, I created all these characters and I was all these cameos. He has influenced the art and the medium in a way that no one else has or likely ever will.
Yeah. Which is, again, back to your, you know, back to that point. You know, I think there will be creators that will get there, but we're still years away from figuring out who they really, really are.
It may not happen in our lifetime.
Exactly. It may not happen in our lifetime. You know, it may happen, you know, late into our lifetime. Yeah. You know, who's to say that, you know, Tom King, you know, won't end up being the guy. Like, because, you know, especially where he is right now, like, his Batman is definitive. Like, even early into, you know, him being a comic book writer, you know, he's written some very definitive stories. You know, I can probably say Jim Lee is at that point, where he is a definitive creator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably even, you know, Jeff Johns. You know, definitive creator. You know, Chris Claremont, definitive creator. So we have some left.
We have similar icons, but nothing at that level.
Exactly. That level. Like, yeah, there will not be another Stan in our lifetime.
No. And I'm almost thankful for that, but also saddened.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next generation deserves that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
makes you feel kind of selfish.
Well, no, it does. Yeah. But I'm okay with that. It breaks my heart a little bit that if Bailey and I ever have kids, that I'm going to be raising my son or daughter in a world without Stan Lee.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's hard for me. Stan's been there my entire life.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and we're 30 damn years old plus.
Yeah, like, there's never been a moment where Stan has not been part of my life. Right. And just the last 2 months have been kind of,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, especially because, you know, especially on the Marvel front, especially stuff that he was so directly involved in, there's still going to be years, dude. There's going to be years of fucking tributes, man. Like, and it's going to hurt every fucking time.
Oh, it's Peter Parker and Mary Jane get married again, and there's going to be something. Like, the priest is going to look like Stan Lee.
Yeah, the fucking priest is going to be Stan Lee. I'm going to fucking cry into the pages of the comic.
They made Jack Kirby the one above all.
Yeah.
The Watcher's going to get reborn, and it's going to be Stan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's, like, I've lost it enough so far.
Yeah.
The moment when I'm, because I think his last, he filmed Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel he did.
He filmed
Civil War he did.
Or
not Civil War. Endgame. Yeah, Endgame.
And, of course, Spider-Verse. So the first one up without him, it hurts that it's going to be a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's the moment.
Yeah, because he didn't. Yeah, they didn't get him from Far From Home.
That's
yeah.
the moment that's going to hurt is when we're sitting in Far From Home and we see In Memory of Stan Lee and Steve Ditko.
Yeah,
and I'm going to risk dehydration.
Yeah, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, I'm going to cry a lot.
Right into my jacket if I'm carrying a jacket.
Oh, I'll cry openly. Like I'll just that. Well, that because at that point one, I probably will have cried so much that everything I own is sopped.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll go from, you know, cameos to, you know, him being a, you know, picture or a mural or, you know, something somewhere. So
they're going to take the Netflix route for there, which...
Oh, boy.
Well, we really depressed the hell out of ourselves now, didn't we? So, I don't think there's anything else we could say about Stan other than we love him and miss him and thank you for all that he gave.
You know, and hopefully, like, a lot of the stuff that he's, you know, really been about will be preserved, because it just came out today that Abraham Roseman, who works for the Vulture in New York Magazine, is going to write a biography about him.
Oh, yeah.
So, hopefully, a lot of his legacy will be preserved in that book, unimpeded.
I've got a writing book that he like writing comics by Stan Lee somewhere in my closet.
Yeah. I'm definitely buying one. Yeah. but yeah, he's done a lot of that, like how to write stories the Marvel way.
Yeah,
he's done a couple of those, I think, actually. Which, you know, I recommend for any creator.
Anyone just really who wants to understand how comics are made.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about it earlier, you know, Sony released the script for, you know, Spider-Verse, you know, which we have both said, we're bookmarking it.
Yeah, no, I've got a PDF of that saved on my computer right now.
Yeah, 100%. you know, and I think that's important for, you know, writers, you know, podcast creators, you know, whatever, like, you know, just to be able to read, you know, formats like that, like creative, you know, writing formats. Because it
just exposure to more art mediums.
Yeah. So, hopefully we get more positive things that will celebrate his life going forward. You know, because even, you know, like, again, like I said, like the last year of his life was just...
It's not the way he deserved.
It's not the way that he deserved to live his last year.
No, not at all. Well, on that note, of course, you can get more information from us at hallofjoseph.com. Tune in for our next episode. Lee, anything from you?
Cerebral Syndicate, like always. We're on Twitter, Facebook. We're on Instagram, podcast, anywhere you listen to your podcasts. So.
You can catch them on our site, too, because we do a lot of crossovers.
Yeah!
Yeah!
I'm around. I'm everywhere.
But with that, we will leave you with some words from the man himself.
Hi, heroes. This is Stan Lee coming at you. Want you to know, Marvel has always been and always will be a reflection of the world right outside our window. That world may change and evolve, but the one thing that will never change is the way we tell our stories of heroism. Those stories have room for everyone, regardless of their race, gender, religion, or color of their skin. The only things we don't have room for are hatred, intolerance, and bigotry. That man next to you, he's your brother. That woman over there, she's your sister. And that kid walking by, hey, who knows? He may have the proportionate strength of a spider. We're all part of one big family, the human family, and we all come together in the body of Marvel. And you, you're part of that family. You're part of the Marvel universe that moves ever upward and onward to greater glory. In other words, Excelsior!